Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello there, welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the very first Arsecast of 2017. That's right, it's a brand new year, a clean slate, a fresh start, a bowl of pasta that's been licked clean by the dog, or something. It is a brand new year though. You're full of good intentions, gonna work harder. Going to be more productive, going to be a better person, going to get fit, going to stay fit, going to do that less, going to do that more. All of these things, January things, first few days of January things, and then it's like, can't be arsed with any of that. But look, I hope if you have made a New Year's resolution that you stick with it, because people make them for good reasons, don't they? It's true. Last year, I completely failed in mine. Only somebody reminded me on Twitter the other day. They said, how did your New Year's resolution go last year? And I said, I'm not sure because I can't remember what it was. But he reminded me of it. And it was to eat more grapes. I had fewer grapes last year than in any other year in my life, I would say. I wouldn't necessarily say my grape consumption itself went down. But I was quite specific about eating grapes and not consuming grapes in their liquid form, you know, when they come out of a nice bottle with a cork in them. So I've failed miserably, like Arsenal in the first 70 minutes against Bournemouth the other night miserably. That's how bad it was, and that's why I've pretty much decided no New Year's resolutions. I don't think so, apart from, you know, just to keep my desk tidy. I really like it when my desk is tidy. It's all, like, there and everything looks good and you look at your desk and you go, I could sit down there and I could work really hard. Look, everything's tidy and neat and there isn't papers everywhere and there aren't notebooks and post-its and sellotape dispensers and bottles of water and all. Maybe that's my New Year's resolution. Just keep a tidier desk because I feel you can do better work when you've got a tidy desk. That could be just me. Maybe I'm alone in the tidy desk syndrome thing, but we'll see. I'll see how it goes. I tidied it yesterday, and it's already kind of messy. I don't know how I do it. I look at it clean and go, this is just simple. Just don't put loads of stuff on it. And then I'll just go, oh, I'll put that there for a second. And then I'll do this, and then some post comes in. You open the post, you put... Terrible. Anyway, tidy desk issues aside, it's been... an interesting week, I think you would say, from a footballing point of view. We've ended up closing the gap on Chelsea by a point, only a single point. But in doing so, we played really dishearteningly badly for 70 minutes against Bournemouth, staged a mighty comeback, which should have left you, from a footballing point of view, feel quite good. I think that was the thing about the first 70 minutes. It made you feel so bad that you just couldn't quite enjoy coming back from 3-0 down to get a point in a game. I mean, it looked like we weren't going to get anything. It looked like it could have been like Southampton away. Do you remember, maybe it was last Christmas, I think, St. Stephen's Day, Boxing Day. We went there and we got beaten 4-0. We played in much the same way as we did against Bournemouth, and it looked like we were going to get that kind of a beating. You know, it was dreadful. And all of a sudden, you spark into life, you score 3 goals, and you're there going, well, what the fuck? Why couldn't you do that in the first part of the game, fuckers? save us all the hassle. So it was weird. You know, on the one hand, you should be delighted that you've got something from a game, but on the other, you're looking at it as 2 points dropped in a title race that isn't over by any stretch of the imagination, but in which there's very little margin for error, and Bournemouth was one of those games I think we should have taken 3 points from. I think when you look at what we did in the last 20 minutes and the way that we conceded the goals that we did, you would have to say that that's a team that we should beat. So weird and strange and, you know, as I said, disheartening and disappointing and everything else. And we're down into fifth, but we're a point closer to Chelsea. So I suppose your outlook on that is, are we capable of hauling back 8 points on Chelsea? Is that something that we should be targeting? I think, of course, we should. I don't know if we're capable of it. I'm not sure I put a great deal of money on it. Or should you be more unhappy now because Tottenham have gone ahead of us? The thing is, though, we're only a point worse off than this stage last year. We've scored more goals. And this time last year, we were top of the table. I know all the other big teams weren't around. There was crazy shit going on last season, of course. But I don't know. It's a strange, weird kind of season, but it looks very much like it's going to be a complete scrap. Toe-to-toe, all of the top six, Arsenal, Tottenham, Manchester United, Manchester City, Liverpool, and Chelsea are going to just slug it out for this title. And when you consider our record in some of those games, those big games against the big teams, you wouldn't necessarily be hugely confident. But look, football is full of surprises. We saw that against Bournemouth. 3-0 down, Olivier Giroud, 2 assists and a goal. And I just couldn't see any way that we were going to get something from that game the way we were playing. Could not see it. And that's what I mean by football being surprising. So what we need, I think, is the last 20 minutes against Bournemouth for the rest of the season in every game. That kind of productivity and efficiency would serve us very well indeed. So look, just about today's show, in a moment I'm going to talk to Adrian Clark, who presents The Breakdown, former Arsenal player, of course, who presents The Breakdown on Arsenal.com. We'll be chatting to him about the midweek game, about Alexis Sanchez and all that kind of stuff. And then a little bit later on, I'm going to be chatting to a chap called Colm McMullen. And if you don't know who he is, I'll tell you about that after we've spoken to Adrian. So look, let's get on with the show. And as I said, I'm delighted to welcome to the Arsecast, Adrian Clark. Hi there.
Hello, Andrew. How are you, mate?
I'm good. So let's start with what was a remarkable game, I guess, with a bit of hindsight now that some of the frustration has died down. When you step back and look at it, it was a crazy game. Arsenal 3-0 down against Bournemouth and staged what looked like a hugely unlikely comeback to equal it up at 3-3. Given the events that have transpired elsewhere, I mean, could this prove to be a valuable point, or am I, you know, searching for a silver lining where there isn't necessarily one?
I think we're all trying to search for silver linings. Look, it could be. I think psychologically, it definitely helped the squad. I think it's been really underplayed, actually, in, you know, when people have reflected on this game. Arsenal were 3-0 down with 20 minutes to play, and they came back to 3-3. What went before was disappointing. It was a poor performance, sloppy defensively, inexplicably so, really. But the players didn't give up on it. They showed great character, good spirit, professionalism, because a lot of teams, at 3-0, the chins would hit the floor and it'd be game over. So there are positives to be drawn from it. And obviously it's not the first time Arsenal have come back from you know, a big deficit this season. So there are definite positives. But, yeah, what will worry the manager is what happened to, you know, in the first hour of that game, which... Yeah, which was way below par, really, and that is concerning.
It was the second game in 48 hours. As a former player yourself, how difficult is it to play two games in such a short period of time?
It's very difficult. Yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to think about when I played on a Saturday and a Monday, which was a rare occasion, but yeah, your legs would be aching before the game, no doubt about that. I mean, these days there are so many masseurs available and you can really look after yourself a lot better than we could back in the day, where lactic acid was a constant problem. So the players are well looked after. But yeah, there is fatigue, and that definitely, Bournemouth had an extra day's rest, of course. But you can't really use that as an excuse, because in this particular game, Arsenal got stronger as it went along. So fatigue is often in the mind as much as the legs. So it felt to me as if Arsenal, in the first hour of that game, felt tired psychologically and maybe didn't want to extend themselves overly, i.e. they wanted to win, but win without overexerting themselves. And that's a dangerous game to play. It wouldn't have been a conscious thing. It would have been subconscious.
Would the manager's comments before the game about how, you know, he has to look at the fixture schedule and how difficult the fixture schedule, would that have played a part in any way into their thinking, or is that just...
I don't know. Well, it was a difficult fixture on paper, so it isn't one that they would have taken lightly, that's for sure. I just think psychologically you think you're knackered before the game's kicked off. It's like, oh, I've hardly recovered from the other game. Here we go again. I want to win, but I'm not going to. Maybe I won't push myself to the maximum. Because nobody wants to blow up at half time, but the situation needed the players to dig deep. And actually, when they did dig deep, we saw what they actually had physically. And that, I think, was another plus of that game. The fitness levels are clearly very good.
Yeah.
Because they were all over Bournemouth towards the end of that game. It wasn't long that they had the man advantage. So yeah, that is something to cling on to.
I mean, you look at Chelsea, for example. People were talking about Chelsea in the build-up to their game against Tottenham on Wednesday night and how the fixtures have been very kind to them. They had 4 days of rest between games, and this was going to be a big advantage. And, of course, they ended up losing, and Arsenal managed to take something from the Bournemouth game. But, like you say, the first 70 minutes were pretty disappointing. But perhaps, I'm not saying that Arsenal played well in any way, but the issues were very much avoidable, weren't they? The first goal, the second goal as well, what was particularly...
Individual mistakes, yeah. I mean, Hector Bellerin's been great, hasn't he? He's been brilliant. But yeah, he had an off night, clearly. Yeah, his positioning for that first goal wasn't good, and he tried to make up for it, dived in. So yeah, that was poor on his part, really. The second goal was a counter attack. It stemmed from an overconfident pass, really, in the middle. I think it was Elneny
I think it was Mustafi to Coquelin, wasn't it?
Mustafi to Coquelin. It was a unnecessarily sort of fiddly pass. Put him in. They break away, and again, Granit Xhaka, if he had his go again, he would have just put the brakes on and shown Fraser down the line. It was definitely avoidable. And the last goal was slack in the build-up, where we allowed Bournemouth to turn defence to attack too quickly. But yeah, Hector Bellerin, in my view, just he needed to expect the shoulder barge from Fraser and just deal with it, just kick the ball out. And again, if he'd had the chance another time, he would do exactly that. So yeah, there were bad goals to give away. I think just the mindset of the players was just below par in this particular game. They weren't sharp enough mentally, and when you come up against a team as busy as Bournemouth, you can easily come unstuck. I mean, it must be said, I don't know whether you've watched the breakdown yet or not, but I did point out in it that Bournemouth broke the record in terms of distance covered in the Premier League this season, 123 kilometres, which is staggering.
Yeah. Really,
when some teams cover about 103, 104 in certain games. So Arsenal did come up against a side that ran their legs off, quite literally, to beat them. So if that puts it into a little bit of context.
Yeah, certainly. They did put that stat up on Sky after the game, and it was quite telling because it was about 7 kilometres more than Arsenal did on the night. So,
But Arsenal's figure was high by their standards,
yeah.
and ordinarily, so I think 115 kilometres. That's good. That's a good high figure. So,
yeah.
So it wasn't as if they were work shy, but they came up against a team that were just full of it, basically, on the night.
And who, I guess you would say, in the last 20 minutes ran out of steam a little bit, because the game obviously changed. It swung on the Alexis goal coming when it did, and the contribution of one man in particular, Olivier Giroud, with two assists and a goal in those last 20 minutes, as much as anyone, dragged Arsenal back into the game to get something from it.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, I'm finding it quite hard to stomach some of the reaction to Olivier Giroud from sections of the support.
I guess,
In terms of, you know, I tweeted, you know, defending him for celebrating that goal. I can see the argument on the other side, but look, he's been heroic in the last few weeks. He's got a winner against West Brom, the brilliant goal against Palace, and without him, Arsenal wouldn't have got anything from that game. The two headers and the assist for Perez were great. Mm. So yeah, I just think people should be applauding Giroud's contribution rather than trying to bury him for getting excited in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. That was my thinking on it. It's like, if there's anger over something, it's completely, I won't say completely misplaced, because I can, to a certain extent, see the point. But, okay, you know, Bournemouth weren't going to kick off in a hurry just because we wanted them to. No. And the other point is that when we did kick off again, it wasn't that we got the ball straight back and went down there. They could have scored. They came forward, and Petr Cech had to make a save. You know, so it just struck me that this was very misplaced anger. That if we were gonna, be crotchety about something, it should be that 70 minutes and the way that the team wasn't switched on from the start.
Yeah, I fully agree with you on that, Andrew. Look, yeah, okay, in an ideal world, you'd pick the ball out of the net, sprint to the halfway line. And yeah, I can see why people are saying, you know, that's the mindset you want from the players. I do get that, but come on. We were 3-0 down, and we pulled it back to 3-3 in injury time. I think he had a right to get excited, and there's absolutely no way that a 12-second celebration impacted on anything that followed.
Yeah, absolutely. One man who wasn't pleased at the end of the game was Alexis Sanchez, who was quite publicly demonstrative with his frustration at the end of the game. Is that something people should be worried about? I know people will say, you know, he's a winner, he doesn't want to accept anything less than the best and all those kind of things. And I think we all get that, and it's part of his character. I don't think Alexis Sanchez, from the time he joined, has always cut a particularly happy figure on and off the pitch at Arsenal. You know, his frustration at times is blindingly evident.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is that just normal for a player like him, or has it... has it changed a little bit? Has it got a bit worse? And is that something that perhaps we should be worried about, given his contract situation?
Yeah, I don't think it's got worse. It is his character. He's a bit of a loner. He's a bit of a lone wolf, really. He's different to the other guys. He's just a different type of personality. And yeah, there's a lot to admire about his character and about his winning mentality. And I don't think it's their big deal. I really don't. I think the players, they all know each other very well by now. Mm. And Alexis puts it in for the team. He's a team player. I don't like it when players are screaming and shouting at one another massively on the pitch, especially if it's more of a gesture for the fans rather than constructive. I like to see constructive chats on the pitch between players, and I don't mind it getting heated.
Yeah.
But sometimes when you wave your arms around, it sometimes feels like it's for show. So there's an element of that to him. But look, he's a Latino player. That's the culture he's been brought up with. And I don't think it's a major issue at all. I certainly don't think it's anything to do with the contract situation. He will have just been fed up that Arsenal put themselves 3 goals down. And yeah, he would have thought, okay, 1 point's better than nothing, but 3 still disappointing. Yeah, I've not enjoyed tonight. I just want to get on the bus, go home. So yeah, everyone's different. We're all different characters. Doesn't mean, by the way, that just because Alexis throws his gloves on the floor, storms down the tunnel, doesn't mean he cares more than the guys that go over and clap the fans and are smiling at the final whistle. It doesn't mean anything. Just different characters. You don't get to become a professional footballer if winning doesn't mean much to you, and if losing doesn't hurt, it means a lot to all of the players, but everyone has a different way of dealing with it.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point, you know, and fans are right to expect a little something from the players at the end of the game. Imagine if all 11 players threw their gloves on the ground and stomped off down the tunnel, there'd be fucking mayhem, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right. You have to accept those characters as part and parcel of the squad, and
as long as they're not rowing, you know, as long as there's no ill feeling
sure.
amongst the players, and you know, I'm not an insider. I don't go to the training ground very often. I don't think there's an issue between Alexis and the rest of the guys. He's maybe not as sociable as some of the others. Mm. You know, he's just so obsessed with football. We all know he loves his dogs. Going home to see it, spend time with his dogs. So, look, he's an individual character. And sure. As long as he is a team player on the pitch and everyone gets along and works together, then it'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, is there somehow a little bit of balance to be found? Because a guy like that on the pitch, who does actually demand the absolute best from those around him, can lift those players at certain times as well, can't he?
Definitely. Yeah, no, we want Alexis and we want him to be pumped up. To be perfectly honest, we want a few more of the guys to show that kind of passion. Because, look, we know the manager isn't confrontational. He's not the type to scream and shout. So maybe it is down to a few of the players to really get in amongst one another on the pitch or in the dressing room and have words and get one another going. I don't mind that. You can't have 11 players screaming and shouting at one another and moaning. It just gets ridiculous. But as long as you've got a few, and I don't for a second believe Alexis is the only one that's vocal behind the scenes. I think there are several big characters. Unfortunately, there are probably one or two injured at the moment.
Yeah.
Which may be making a difference. But yeah, look, I think the team spirit, to be perfectly honest, is pretty good. I think it's as good as it's been for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can see that to a certain extent. And I know, like, the last month has been a bit challenging, but I think when you look at team spirit and the mentality of a team and the desire a team has to do well, you look at some of the results that we've pulled off quite late, or some of the wins, or, you know, it's a team that will keep going right until the end, as frustrating as 70 minutes can be. If you can do that in the last 20 minutes, it's better than not being able to do it at all.
Yeah, I fully understand the frustration, the section of the fans that, you know, they're worried about it being deja vu and no progress, and the Arsenal, I think the word flaky's been used, hasn't it, in the past. I get where that criticism has come from, because the performances against Everton and City were disappointing. It's hard to explain. I do think that in terms of the big match mentality, there are improvements to be made. They've just got to be a little bit more focused and united, and maybe aggressive in implementing their game plans in those particular matches, rather than maybe playing at the same pace as they do, you know, in most weeks. Sometimes it just takes that extra bit of focus. We saw it against Chelsea. We've seen it against Manchester United last season. So the team are more than capable of kind of getting together, sticking to the game plan and really seeing it through. We just want to see that on a consistent basis, don't we? And to be honest, that's just got to come from within, really. And we just got to hope that the players have learned from those disappointments at Everton and City. Because, look, I think this season, how Arsenal fare will be decided on how they do in the five games against the big boys. It's as simple as that. I think all of them are going to swat aside most of the also-rans. It's going to come down to that mini-league, and Arsenal need to step up and do the business in those games.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, it is going to take it. That's going to take a massive effort. But look, nobody becomes champions easily. Would you have any concerns just at the moment about the midfield area? Because Francis Coquelin is going to be out for 3 to 4 weeks with a hamstring strain. Mohamed Elneny is gone to the African Cup of Nations. Santi Cazorla remains sidelined. He's far away, according to Arsene Wenger, which leaves us with just Granit Xhaka and Aaron Ramsey. Now, that's a partnership I've been quite keen to see. More than we have. So on that basis, I'm relatively okay with the situation. But Aaron's hamstrings are a bit iffy, and Xhaka is potentially a discipline issue. Not always. I think he gets a bad rap for the most part. But, you know, he does have it in his locker, you might say. So we're potentially a bit short in that area at this moment in time.
Definitely, yeah. It's not a lot of wriggle room, is there?
No.
What I will say as an aside, is that Alex Iwobi, I think, is someone that might surprise us. He's someone that we might just need to change the system if something happens to one of those two guys. I think it will be Xhaka and Ramsey. Maybe Maitland-Niles might get a look in the FA Cup. Mm. That'd be interesting to see. But yeah, Xhaka and Ramsey, interested to see how it fares. What we could do, I think, if one of them gets injured, is potentially, you know, let's say, for instance, Aaron Ramsey's out. You could go with Xhaka flanked by Iwobi and Ozil as a midfield three, as a 4-1-4-1 type formation.
Yeah.
That's something we could potentially do as an alternative. So yeah, and we've got the Ox, who we haven't seen in central midfield for a while. But he's done it before, hasn't he? So that's another thing that the manager has up his sleeve. But yeah, it's a shame because Francis has it. He's not everybody's cup of tea, but he has his value, that is for sure. And in certain matches this season, he's been absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll miss him. It is a pity, isn't it, that Jack Wilshere is down at Bournemouth and we can't get him back.
I mean, throughout this season, when he made the move, I was thinking, what are you doing? Remember where you are. Remember what club you're at. Remember what the treatment table is like. And he should know as well as anybody what it was like. And, you know, it felt to me like Arsene Wenger was easing him into first team action. He'd given him a couple of substitute appearances. And I think when you look at the fixtures we played, some of the games we played between Champions League, some of the cup games, certainly some of the Premier League games, I think he would have got plenty of football. And now we're in a position where he had a real chance to sort of establish himself as a big part of the Arsenal first team. And it feels like it's going to be much harder for him to do that when he comes back next year.
Maybe, yeah. I think it actually for his own confidence, it probably was better to go to Bournemouth to get the football, because he's playing week in, week out, and he's getting the praise now. Everybody's loving his work down there. So I think for him, it's turning into a bit of a win. Okay, we don't know what's going to happen next summer.
Mm.
But yeah, from Arsenal's perspective, I'm just a bit surprised that we didn't get something in there that said, look, in an emergency, we want to call him back. You know, you can have him definitely until January, but after that, maybe you can put in a clause to call him back in an emergency. I don't know. Maybe Bournemouth wouldn't have accepted it on those terms. But yeah, if he was to be in Arsenal's squad right now, he'd have a great shot at nailing down a regular spot, wouldn't he?
Sure would. Very quickly, just to finish off, FA Cup this weekend, so there's no Premier League action, but it's FA Cup. Preston North End, away from home, Saturday evening. The manager was talking in his press conference on Thursday about, you know, how he's going to rest certain players. So Ospina's going to come in, he's going to rest Alexis Sanchez. But for the most part, he doesn't have a huge amount that he can rotate because of the players we have out and have injured. How are you expecting this one to go? It's not going to be easy. It never is in the cup.
No. Preston aren't mugs by any stretch of the imagination. They're actually the sort of team that might cause us one or two problems if the attitude isn't right. I think if the application's spot on, if the players are on it, they can win it comfortably. But if not, look, Preston are quite abrasive. They're very well organised. So at the back, you know, that's a strength for them. They often play with three at the back, sometimes four, but they're strong down the middle. They score a lot of set pieces, you know, strong in the air. So we've got to be careful there.
Mm.
It's like it is with all these cup ties away from home. You got to win the battle and then hope the quality comes through in the end. But yeah, I think this is a trickier tie than some people think it is. So we've got to be really concentrated. And if the team are, then it'll be fine.
All right. Well, look, we'll keep fingers crossed for that. And hopefully we'll catch up again later in the season. Adrian Clark, thanks very much.
No worries at all. See you soon.
Thank you to Adrian. You can find him on Twitter at Adrian J. Clark. And of course, he presents The Breakdown on Arsenal.com, which is a great analytical look at our games after the fact, wins and losses. It provides some real clarity to the way we play and the performances and everything else. So do check them out. That is The Breakdown on Arsenal.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Right, we did touch on the Giroud goal celebration thing, and I've said pretty much all I think I need to say about it, and I've written all I need to write about it between what I said on Arsblog and a piece for ESPN that you might have seen. But in my travels during the week and on those pieces, there were some comments. Some people disagreed. Some people agreed. This is the incredible thing about opinion. You know, we can have differences of opinion. And I don't necessarily need to convince you of mine, and you don't have to convince me of yours. We can both exist quite happily with a difference of opinion. The world will not end because two people think differently about the same thing. So it's worth a try rather than spend all day arguing about it on Twitter. But one comment did catch my eye. I'm not going to say where it came from, but it was a Facebook comment, I guess you would say. And it sort of lent itself to one of those dramatic reading type things. I'm not quite sure where this person exactly was coming from, but it did make me laugh. So this is it. Let's do it. "I'm not Arsenal fans, but I can't see any reason to criticise. If you think Arsenal should win, why don't you cancel the match and give Arsenal 3 points? Play the match because both have chance. Sport is fair. As a forward, Olivier Giroud responsible for attack, and he scored. Celebration is nature. Smile, criticize. Blackface, criticize. No goal, criticize. Score and celebration, criticize. Make me think about North Korea." I'll admit, I had it in the myself, just because I felt the rest of the comment lent itself to that kind of denouement, if you like. But fantastic. I think that pretty much summed the whole thing up. We don't need to discuss it any further. We can just draw a line under the whole thing right now. And finally, we can move on with our lives. Okay, something a little bit different on the Arsecast now. I'm delighted to welcome to the show Colin McMullen, a name you're probably not familiar with, but you're probably very familiar with something that he has made, which is the Stats Zone app, which you can get for iOS and Android. Colin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Andrew.
My pleasure. So look, tell me this. Where did the app come from? Was it your brainchild? Was it something that was commissioned and you being a developer-y kind of guy were lucky to be in the right place at the right time? Or how did it happen?
Yeah, I think the brainchild option there is probably the one to go for. So I actually started it quite a long time ago in app terms. The first version of it came out in 2010. For the World Cup. I had been working at a company called Multimap as a software developer and doing all kinds of stuff in online mapping. That company was getting killed in a way by Google. Somehow the management of the company managed to sell it to Microsoft. And, you know, I stayed there working at Microsoft for a while, but really wasn't enjoying it. So I decided to quit and kind of try and do something that I was interested in and see if I could sort of make a go of it in a way. And that's where the app came from. So I launched it totally independently, bought some data from Opta for the World Cup, which cost me a penny or two.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And then, you know, was kind of just trying to find its way in the App Store, seeing if I could make it commercially viable, which I failed with independently. So, you know, doing that for the World Cup in 2010, and then in the following season for the Champions League, it became pretty clear that wasn't going to be sustainable for me. So luckily enough, in kind of 2011, we got together with 442 and decided to partner on the app to release it under their brand. So I licensed the app to them, and we released it at that stage just for the Premier League. And since then, it's continued, and each year we've kind of grown it. We've added competitions. We've now done the Android app, as you say.
Sure.
There's a web version of it. And, you know, that's kind of grown and grown. And this season, we've just launched the iPad version for the first time. So,
right.
You know, it's been kind of remarkable that it's kind of continued for so long in a way. But
sure.
I still think it's got plenty of legs.
And just for people who don't necessarily know what this is, StatZone is an app where you can get detailed team and player stats from every Premier League game, for every Premier League club. You know, I use it obviously from an Arsenal point of view, so you can go in during a game, after a game, you've got all the stats, passes, tackles, clearances, goals, assists, all that kind of stuff. So it is kind of invaluable, I have to say, for me, certainly, who is writing about football every single day. It's great to have that kind of information there and so freely available. And I think that's something that's, I guess, a new enough development. Some of this data would have been there, obviously, for football clubs, and Opta have become this, I guess, behemoth in terms of the sort of information that they can provide over every match. But I think now that it's available to anybody who is, the app is free, is it? Or is it?
Yeah, it is totally free to use.
So anybody that can go on the Google Play Store or the iOS Store can download this app and check out the stats. And I think it is. I'm not saying we're moving in a completely new direction, but certainly there is much more openness to the use of data and information in how we view and how we talk about football these days.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting because where the idea of the app actually came from was from my own kind of experience watching football probably about kind of 10 plus years ago. And back then, for Champions League matches, and they still do this, UEFA on their website published these PDFs that have, you know, loads of stats about the match. They're really, really hidden on the UEFA website. But you can go in, I think they're under press kits or something like this, but, you know, anybody can download them. So, you know, there you got kind of pass completion rates, you got pass combinations, you know, obviously things like shots on target and tackles and interceptions. And, you know, around that time as well, there was the Guardian chalkboard, which some people will remember, which was kind of only available post-match. So whenever I was looking at those, I kind of thought, you know, I knew about the data that was available from Opta. I knew it was available live. You know, we saw kind of where this was going in terms of people using smartphones, so iOS or Android. And it was, you know, it just made sense to say, okay, let's take this data and make it available to people live during the match so that you can really go in depth and look at, you know, each team, each player, what their particular actions are. So, you know, again, everything from shots and passes to the attacking events like a player's take-ons or their crosses, their defensive actions like tackles and interceptions. And yeah, you know, kind of opening that up in a way to a bigger audience than, you know, the people who would only get access to that in clubs or if you worked at Sky or BBC or something.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's great that now anybody can really go and pick up this data and, you know, start to analyze it themselves.
Yeah, I mean, are you still in some ways, I won't say fighting, but I think there is still, to some extent, a resistance to this kind of information and this kind of data being used. You hear people talk all the time, well, stats don't tell you everything, but stats is, nobody's ever claimed that stats tell you everything. You know, there does appear to be that resistance, but it can inform what you've seen, or in some cases, I know that I've had matches where I'm watching it and I'm going, God, he was a bit careless, wasn't he, on the ball? And you're sort of looking to do player ratings or something like that, and you're going, well, was he actually careless on the ball? I'll go back and I'll have a look, and you discover that he only maybe misplaced 3 passes out of 60 in the entire game, but because they came, let's say, at a certain point of the game, or what happened after they misplaced the pass was significant, that it can in some ways colour the impression that you have of a player's performance. So I guess it's trying to inform people that, okay, look, these stats aren't here to tell you everything, but when you look at a game with your own eyes and then use these, it can round out your view, or perhaps even change it to a certain extent.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I mean, you wrote about the app on Arsblog the other day, and I think you captured it brilliantly in terms of, talking about the nuance that there is to a performance. And, you know, the best way that we have to judge at the minute is to use kind of our own personal experience of what we see in a match and kind of our expectations around that with the stats or data to kind of, I guess, confirm or challenge that opinion in a way, so that, you know, you can kind of have a more holistic view of what happened in the match rather than just kind of your selective memory. And, you know, I don't think anybody can claim to really have an attention span of 90 minutes that they're going to pick up every little detail. So, you know, especially when you hear the likes of Wenger in a press conference saying that, you know, he looked at the stats after the match and he was surprised to see something. I think we can all kind of fall into that bucket. But I think more broadly, this isn't something that has been accepted by everybody, as you say. But I think that's also the influence of kind of, you know, the internet challenging mainstream media, where it used to be that, you know, your choice of what to consume and how to consume something was very limited by, just a couple of options. Whereas now you can really personalize kind of your own experience. So while you'll still watch the match on Sky or BT, for instance, you might not watch the coverage. You know, like what I would do personally is I would watch the pre-match press conference on the Arsenal website, rather than listening to the pundits.
I'm exactly the same. I don't watch pre-match punditry. I don't watch halftime punditry unless there's absolutely something that I really want to see, whether it's something brilliant or something contentious. I try to avoid it as much as possible because I feel, to a certain extent, like I hate to use the word narrative, but the narrative of the game is driven by what you're hearing. You know, so you can talk to somebody, let's say, who was at a game and somebody who's watched the game on the television, and the impression that they both have is completely different. And the thing that strikes me is that, you know, a co-commentator could just say, let's use Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain for example, and he could just say something like, well, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain is having a terrible game, or he's really struggling down that right-hand side. And that becomes embedded in people's minds, whether or not that's necessarily true, because it's only just one guy's subjective opinion, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think now having, you know, access to this data and using a tool like StatZone gives you the option to say, actually, I'm going to decide what I think about this myself, rather than just kind of falling into that narrative that you kind of point out there. I think we see that very often. You know, the kind of example that, you know, I would kind of pick out from recent weeks is something like the performance of Ozil against Man City, which was kind of widely discussed and, you know, picked apart on social media in a way. And, you know, before you had access to this sort of data, it would kind of be an open and shut case. It would be, you know, he was lazy, he didn't contribute. But whenever you kind of go into StatZone and you take a look at his performance, and, you know, you can compare that then against other matches where you know, you could say that he played well. So in the Man City match, for instance, he received 49 passes. And because we have access as well to the location of each of those passes, we can see where they took place on the pitch. And it's clear there that he wasn't receiving the ball in the final third or in areas that, you know, you would want him to. Compared to something like, you know, the Chelsea match earlier in the season,
yeah,
where he received 76 passes and almost all of those were in the opposition half. And most of them, you know, in the attacking third. So, you know, whenever you look at his output then in each of those matches, against Man City, he only completed 10 passes in the attacking third versus against Chelsea, where he completed 39. So, you know, you can take that and then you can say, okay, well, what is it about his performance that we should look at here? And for me, you know, looking at that, what I take from it is that the rest of the team weren't able to get him on the ball in the areas that he can do his best work.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, some kind of personal feeling of his own. And then kind of go into other things like, you know, one of the things that I noticed during the match against Man City was just how often that Cech was kicking the ball along. You know, there was no playing out from the back at all. And I looked into that with stats on and saw that he made 38 long passes in that match, Cech did. Which is the most of any match this season. So, you know, it kind of makes you question, was that part of the game plan?
Sure.
Were Man City preventing, you know, the defence from building out from the back? And, you know, then what effect did kind of Cech kicking the ball long have on Ozil getting on the ball in good areas?
Yeah, I mean, it really does. Like I say, it gives you a rounded view, or at least it can point to other issues as well as the ones that have been highlighted. You know, the truth lying somewhere in between. So, I mean, in terms, just finally, in terms of the app itself and the features, I mean, pretty much everything you'd want is in there. But are there things that we might see added in the future? One of the things that always struck me was that in terms of goalkeepers, there's no stat for saves.
Yeah, I mean, essentially for that, you look at the opposition's shots on target, as opposed to looking at the goalkeeper and pulling that out. I think goalkeeper stats in general is something that, you know, isn't very well catered for, and, you know, there probably is some good work to do in that area. From my point of view on the kind of bigger picture of, you know, where the stats could go, you know, the idea of the of stats on and the kind of design of the app is that, you know, it's not intending to tell you what to think. It's there as a tool to give you access to this, to kind of, you know, broaden your own opinion. So pretty much everything in the app is just the raw match data. It's, you know, the passes, the shots, for you to go in and do the analysis yourself. But I think where, you know, that could definitely be kind of taken to the next level is then looking at phases of play and sequences. So that's something that, you know, I've done a bit of work on. But, you know, I don't really want to push it down a road of making it something that, you know, is more of something that I've kind of lost my train there.
No, I know what you're saying, that sort of sometimes less is more, that you're not adding so many bells and whistles that people can't figure out exactly what it is they're using the app for in the first place.
Yeah, and, you know, as well, it is intended to cater for the more casual use, as well as the real in-depth analysis of individual players or of the team. So, you know, kind of balancing that simplicity, but also the depth to let people who want to go into that level to be able to do that is very important to me.
All right. Well, listen, first off, thanks very much indeed for making it, because it's a tremendously handy app and tool to have if you're writing about football all the time. For people who don't know about the app, you can get it on iOS. You can get it on Android. There's a web version. There's an iPad version. It's called Stats Zone in association with 442. Sounds like they're coming for you there, Colm. So we'll leave it there. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you very much indeed to Colm. The app is called StatsZone, and you can find it on iOS, you can find it on Android, and you can get it for iPad as well. It really is fantastic. It gives you so much information about individual players. It gives you information about games, performances, and it does, certainly from my point of view, it's a fantastic tool to have when you're writing a blog, writing a website about Arsenal. To have that kind of information at your fingertips is brilliant. And if you're a person with an interest in stats, this is definitely something that you should add to your phone, your device, whatever it is that you use. So it's called StatsZone. Do check it out from the Google Play Store, the App Store, and I guess that's all the places you can get it. If this sounds a little bit muddled right now, it's because I got up this morning. It's now just after 7 o'clock in the morning, and I got up this morning to just put the final touches on the Arscast, to do the mix down and everything else. My computer crashed overnight, and the final bit of the Arscast that I recorded about the Preston game and everything else was gone. The whole thing was gone. I thought the whole thing was like saved somehow, or for some reason it wasn't. So that's why this bit is sounding a little bit muddled, because I've got to do it again. And I can't remember what exactly I was saying. I was talking about the Preston game in the FA Cup. Obviously, we're playing them tomorrow evening at Deepdale. And I think it's going to be a more tricky game than people think. You know, they're in the top half of the Championship, so it's not like we're playing a team from League One or League Two or the Conference or something like that. This is a decent side, and we are going to make changes. Arsene Wenger already said he's going to be without Laurent Koscielny, who's got some thigh problems. There's an injury doubt over Lucas Perez. There's Alexis Sanchez. He's going to be rested. What else is going to happen? You look at maybe Hector Bellerin, who carried a knock into the Bournemouth game. Could he be rested? Are we going to change things around at the centre of defence? Clearly, someone's going to have to come in for Koscielny. Is Rob Holding going to get a game? We've only got two fit central midfield players as well. Can he risk both Aaron Ramsey and Granit Xhaka in this particular game? It is the FA Cup, and it is a trophy, and it's one we should take seriously, one we obviously have taken very seriously in the past. But I do think that with the kind of team that we're going to put out, which is going to be, I won't say weakened, but you would also say it's going to be far from our strongest 11, whether or not it's going to be capable of winning this game as easily as we might like. I think if you've watched football and if you've watched Arsenal long enough down the years, you will know that the third round of the FA Cup is more than capable of throwing up a few surprises. And if we're not switched on, if we play in any way like we did in the first 70 minutes against Bournemouth, we are going to have a real fight on our hands. So fingers crossed we don't do that. Fingers crossed we do get the win, because I have to say I love the FA Cup. I know some people look at it as a poor relation of sorts, but look, for me, the FA Cup is a great competition, and it's one I want to see us do really well in. Given it is just after 7 this morning, and I've got plenty of things to do, including writing a blog and everything else, I'm going to leave it here. But just to remind you that myself and James will be here on Monday, of course. We'll be looking back at the Preston game and then looking ahead to what we're going to do in the Premier League next weekend when we face Swansea and everything else that happens in between. So join us for the Arscast Extra then. I'll be back with another Arscast next Friday. Hope you have a great weekend. Hope the Arsenal can contribute to that in the small way that they do by, you know, winning a football match. That would be great. So until then, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Hey, what have I told you about celebrating? This is not the time or the place to celebrate. Do you hear me? Do you hear me?
Yes, Dad, but it's my birthday and I'm only 4.
Well, I'm none of your back chat, son. Take your present off the table, unwrap it, and run straight back to your room.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm like a good little boy.
Yes, Dad. Fine, can.
What did you say?
Nothing.